Support comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. This winter, Strategic Farm Marketing is holding risk management seminars near you. A complete list of meeting dates and locations can be found at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the February 2 edition of Commodity Week.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities. He's in Normal, Illinois. Joe Vaklovic is here from Standard Grain out of Chicago, Illinois. Dan Zwicker from Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. And our special guest, Roy Huckabee of Linen Associates out of Chicago, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. Let's begin, as usual, with this simple question. What are the things that we should discuss, or at least that's on the top of your mind for this week as items in the marketplace? Dan Zwicker, I think I'll start with you today.
Well, I'm down here in the Rio Grande Valley here. I go to Mexico about every other day, so it's just kind of fun to go to Mexico. But I'd like to know what all the market advisory services are advising. I've been just watching the technical side of the market and kind of been ignoring all of the advice that's been going on to farmers and whether or not farmers are following them. And if the farmers aren't following, why aren't they following them, I guess?
Roy Huckabee at Linen Associates.
Well, I'm not as far south as Waco, but I'm in southeast Florida or southwest Florida, so I'm about as far south as him. We're working out of our branch office this last couple of months. And I would tell you that the farm community didn't take much advice to get him to sell his beans. He's probably sold 75% of his bean ownership and sold well into next year, too, because of the plan to expand acres. Corn's a little more difficult to anticipate. I think he sold 50 or 55% of his corn ownership, and the community's not been as uniformly negative corn as they have been beans. And I think that there's reasons for that, but the expansion in bean acres and the big carryovers from last year. And, you know, we didn't get quite the boost out of Argentina that we did last year. We rallied beans, $2.50 last year because it got beans got drowned out in northern Argentina this year. They drowned them out in the center part of the state, and we only rallied beans about 80 or 90 cents. Gave everybody a chance to sell stuff again.
Pete Manhart from Bates Commodities. I think that leaves us a few items that we might want to take up. Acreage, I suppose, is on your list. For the end of the month of March, anything else?
Well, the acreage, who knows what it'll be, but it seems that industry thinks we're going to have more beans and less corn. Corn costs are down this year as far as fertilizer and anhydrous, so that might have a little effect. But if we have more acres of beans, a lot of expectations of lower bean prices, so that would mean protecting those $10 levels that we have.
Joe Vaklovic, I know when we have four of you on the show that by the time we get to the last one, there aren't a lot of things left, but I bet you've got a few things up your sleeves yet. What are you thinking about?
I'd like to elaborate on what Roy said about the ownership situation. You know, in the soybeans, it's kind of interesting. He said 75% of the old crop beans are priced, and I think that's probably right. I think it could be higher than that. You know, when you get a market that doesn't have the large farmer ownership, that's when you can put your rallying shoes on, and that's exactly what the bean market's been able to do here over the last year, essentially. We're starting to see a little more of that in the corn market. You know, funds are long corn now. I've got reason to believe that we've seen a lot greater farmer selling here recently as we creep up towards some 6 or 7 month highs. So it's going to be really interesting to watch the ownership structure in these markets.
Yeah. So do you think this will change, Joe Vaklovic, very much over the month of February at all for old crop corn?
Well, for the moment, I think the bushels that are being sold, they're being sold for cash flow. And because the board's the best it's been or 6 or 7 months, basis is still, you know, a problem in some areas. You know, in central Illinois, a lot of the listeners don't have the problems that people say up north in Minnesota and the Dakotas have. I mean, basis levels around here are much better. But, yeah, if the old crop corn market, if the futures could get anywhere near $4, that's going to clean up a great deal of old crop bushels. And that's when you've really got the leverage for a greater rally. If you were to run into, say, some sort of issue with either low acreage, planting weather, summer weather, you know, any of those things.
Yeah, Dan, you worked inside the ABCs and Z at one point in your career. You understand some about the cash grain market more than most, I would think. What do you think about how producers have got themselves situated at this time in February? Is it different than it usually is?
Well, farmers aren't, you know, they did sell, I think, quite a bit. Of course, they sold a lot of beans last year, you know, at $9 a year ago this time. And then they, you know, when beans went to $10 or during the fall months, they released a lot of those others. But lately, I'm not too sure farmers are really doing a lot of selling. I think they're doing a lot of basis contracting. I think they're needing some money, but they're still wanting to maybe stay along this market because of memories of last year as we rallied, as we went through planting and into the early part of the growing season. So at least the guys that I've talked to inside those ABCs, they're kind of friendly corn. Probably got to be a little bit negative on soybeans, especially last week. They kind of got a little negative and kind of threw in the towel. But there's a lot of corn demand out there to be met and a lot of corn to be pulled out of the farmers' hands. So generally speaking, I think you'd have to maybe classify them as friendly corn, maybe a tad negative probably on soybeans because of the South American situation.
I'm wondering, Pete Manhart, a little bit about South America, and this time around, as it relates to corn, there are some thoughts that there may be some situations developing with the weather in parts of Brazil. Harvest taking place in Mato Grosso, but normally they would come back with a safrinha crop. They've been fairly wet, and if you delay corn crop planting there very much, then you risk being put into that part of the season that turns really dry as you get into their pollination time frame and, of course, grain fill. Should we be worried about that yet, or are we too early in the situation to put that much risk into the marketplace?
I think we're really too early. There's been some rains that slowed down harvest in places, but they've started planting corn in places also. But as far as an overall general later, I don't know that that's something to worry about yet.
I want to come back to something you mentioned earlier, that it's gotten cheaper to put corn in the ground, that the cost of fertilizers and fuel and nitrogen seem to be backing off some. Do you have some good hard data that supports that?
I've just got several farmers that told me their nitrogen bill they got at $4.40 a ton instead of what it was, 100 or more the ton more than last year, and the fertilizer is a little cheaper. The seed isn't, but they might be buying middle-of-the-road seed instead of top-end seed and then maybe putting a little more nitrogen on it to hopefully get the yields up there. But it's basically from farmers telling me their costs aren't quite as high, maybe 50 to 70 an acre less per acre to plant corn.
Yeah, are those same producers willing to stay with their crop rotation as opposed to adding more soybean acres because of a higher soybean price?
I think most of them are, but if they are, they're also trying to lock in prices. If they think they can grow 200 bushel corn at, you know, 370, that might be better than growing 55 bushel beans at wherever they are. How many people have locked in bean prices for this year, this fall? As someone talked earlier, an awful lot of sales last year at 9 up to 10, and then we went to 11. So farmers for this fall, I don't know if they've sold much in the way of beans, and if we don't protect them or sell them, if we plant 4 to 5 million more acres of beans, that 8 is a number that people are throwing out in front of the bean instead of a 10.
Roy Huckabee, that would bring me back to you because you did talk about old crop soybean sales, thinking that about 75% had been marketed. Maybe you can build in the new crop and what you think producers have done so far.
Well, I think they've been aggressive to sell beans. I mean, it's just been in their soul. A couple of big guys that I deal with feel that beans have returned better for them for the last 2 years than corn has, even with the big corn yields. So, you know, I think that that's a factor when you go looking at what they're going to plant next year. And I'm at odds with the USDA on their acreage anyway. I think they're short about 3 or 4 million acres in the total crops. So I'm not sure when those acres show up or where they've gone in the past, but I think we've got a bigger acreage base than what the government's giving us.
Right. So you're of a mind that even last year's crop was short acreage, whether that was in corn, soybeans, or some other place.
Well, I felt all along that the stocks numbers eventually would show that we had a bigger crop than what the USDA said last year. That's what my feeling has been. So I'm waiting for that shoe to fall, you know. When you talk about South America, I think that there's something that's insidious that's happened there that not too many people are talking about. Everybody's worried about the bean production down there, and I think the Brazilian bean production continues to get bigger. This week I've heard 108, 110, even 112 million tons for Brazil. And I think if you look at the total crop, even with the reduction in Argentina, you're still looking at a crop in Brazil that's 7, 8, 9, 10 million tons bigger than last year. But when you look at the corn, and I'm plugging in a big double crop corn acres in Brazil, but when you look at the corn, I'm looking at 125 million production up from 97 last year. That's, you know, you're looking at 28 million tons more corn in South America than what they had last year. Now, last year was a bad year because the safrinha crop got fried. But the picture that I see in Brazil is still pretty positive to crops, and the rains we're getting right now is a really great start to the safrinha corn crop. So
you paint a very bleak picture, I suppose, for May, June, and July, especially for soybeans, maybe a bit later than that for corn. Are you really quite bearish?
I look at the bean complex maybe a little different than most other people do, and I grew up as a, you know, trading with crushers, and the crusher always felt that they had control of the oil in the meal market. And when you talk to a crusher and he says, well, meal base is a little weak, spreads are starting to widen out a little bit, you better be short meal, it's going down. That doesn't work today. Our meal basis is a record low. You're offered at option price in the export market. You're offered at 55 under in Minnesota. You're offered at 45 under, maybe trade 50 under in Iowa. Illinois is at 25 under. Those are record low basis levels, and here the meal board won't break down. Now, maybe it's starting to a little bit, but every time I've sold meal on weakness, it's spanked me for this past year. Because the funds have found it.
Because funds have found it. So is there a fundamental structural change in the marketplace?
The only fundamental change is the continued growth in China. There's a lot of reasons to be bearish meal. I mean, when China shut off DDGs, it's flooded the U.S. with a huge amount of DDGs. We're trading DDGs on a per protein basis, dollars less than meal. We've got DDGs plugged in as a protein replacement for all the hogs and poultry operations to the max. And you've got DDGs now priced at about 90 to 85% of corn in most of the country. So you're starting to replace corn in cattle and dairy rations. So I think that the meal market in general has a lot of bad things around. And the only positive thing that I can give you is the fact that Argentina exports 47% of the world's meal trade. And when you start worrying about the crops in Argentina, maybe meal gets a boost from it. But boy, rallying the meal market doesn't do anything for us getting rid of more meal. Now that I've said that, we've sold 1 million tons of meal in the last 3 weeks. So all that meal is being discounted sharply to keep the crusher running.
Dan Zwicker, I feel as if you're thinking this marketplace has some legs under it. Can you put that in fundamental terms or in technical terms or maybe both?
I watched the dollar, and the dollar has done nothing but decline since the first of the year. We actually recorded a monthly reversal to the downside in the U.S. dollar. And I guess I'm one to believe that a weaker dollar is still going to be the story of the year as we go forward. I know that is against at least the majority opinion. I think everybody thinks higher interest rates and all this rigmarole is going to raise the value of the dollar, but I'm not in that camp. I think the dollar is going to weaken, and I think that's going to keep U.S. Commodities priced into the world market. I still think the Trump trade policy will end up benefiting U.S. farmers simply because he's going to try to narrow those trade deficits in Mexico and China. And one thing that we do have to sell them is food. And I think demand for food could surprise everybody for the year. And then the other thing is about every 5 years, we have a weather issue. It's been 5 years since the 12th drought. So now we are getting off to, I know the corn crop here in the valley and the Corpus Christi Gulf, it doesn't amount to much, but nothing's getting planted. Everybody's waiting on a rain, and this is the time of year they like to start planting. The fields are ready, but everybody's waiting around for a rain. So I don't know if that's telling us anything down the road or not.
NOAA this week did mention that suddenly El Nino or warmer predictions are coming out of some of its models much more quickly than they thought, and they came out of nowhere. The thought on that one might be more likely targeted at palm oil, parts of India, parts of Indonesia. Could be corn crop, I suppose, in India. However, that still has yet to come about, so there may be something there as a fundamental to watch. It's been an interesting conversation, Joe, so far. Mr. Vaclavic, what do you think about the two sides of this market you're hearing about?
Well, on the weather front, you know, we haven't had a good weather rally in quite a while. And, you know, the more I deal with these markets, the two things I know is, one is that you can't pay attention to any of the weather forecasts, especially the long-term stuff. It's totally useless. Just ask anybody who bought into that drought forecast last summer. But the second thing is that we're going to have weather scares. And last year, I don't know if you want to call that June rally a weather scare, but it was a scare of some sort. And I would venture to say that at some point this year, we will have some sort of weather scare, maybe not a full-blown weather event, but you've always got fear and greed driving these markets. And if you have the fear that the weather's going to negatively affect the crop in any way, it's going to be a positive force within the marketplace. The other thing is that, you know, we've had marketing opportunities in these markets each of the last 3 years. And in each of the last 3 years were bad years, but we have had opportunities. So I am fairly confident that, yes, we'll have an opportunity to market corn at prices that make money this year. I don't know why it will happen. I don't know when it will happen. But I think that throughout the course of this calendar year, I think we're going to have an opportunity for one reason or another.
Pete Manhart, what are the things that, tools that is, that producers have at their disposal, in your opinion, that can give them some confidence to go ahead and market a crop, a new crop in particular, as opposed to the old crop, without actually having it in the bin? And what helps you make those decisions for them? What do you watch in the marketplace, and what tools do you like to use?
Well, if they're ready to make sales, they can always buy calls to replace it here or somewhere like here. And so that's something that I'm really not ready to market corn yet, because I'm, like the gentleman before, thinking that we will have an opportunity to price it higher later. But buying calls to replace sales, I think, is a good thing. And if you're not going to make the sales, we have the puts to protect the downside. And we're working on protecting the downside on beans right now. I think this time of year, as was quoted earlier, people sold a lot of beans. I think they're waiting more this year than before, so we're looking at protecting the downside, and hopefully we'll have another bounce on the beans to actually do cash. But if we've sold cash beans, I think you don't need those puts. If you are waiting, I think you need puts on the cash beans on corn. If you've sold, we can replace it, because we feel like the corn will have an up move throughout somewhere through the year.
Hey, Dan, somebody told me recently that they thought $9.80 and $10 beans, $10.20 beans were cheap. What do you think?
It's all relevant. At least we've seen this, you know, the past year, there's been good demand for these value of beans. But, you know, as we've talked about, the supply demand tables could begin to look quite sloppy, depending upon how the South American crop finishes out. And what happens here in the United States, we could be looking at some pretty large inventory levels and some sharply lower prices. One thing that, you know, one thing I want to mention, most of the risk I think we have in the market is usually the first dollar down in beans and maybe the first 50 cents down on corn. And I think farmers should maybe look at that in developing strategies to capture that first dollar down or first 50 cents down, because that's what comes the quickest. Then the market stalls and hee-haws around, and then everybody gets hopeful for a recovery rally, and then it doesn't happen, and then maybe then we go down another leg. But you don't need to protect yourself down to zero. And that's the same way with these beans. I know that there's people that have thrown out some pretty bearish numbers. I hope they keep throwing those bearish numbers out, because this will keep this market, you know, climbing that wall of worry. But I wouldn't necessarily say beans are cheap at these values, but I think looking at the demand, they seem to be fairly priced the way we're selling them anyway.
Roy, I want to get back to your comments earlier and ask you whether globalization of commodities and trade, and in particular the availability and ease of movement of corn and soybeans across the planet, has changed very much what happens in Chicago.
When you look for a measure of the markets and how they're performing, I still have to tie the markets to cash. And the cash would tell you that the markets are too high. We're looking at corn basis barges, for example. Bean barges are 32 over. A five-year average is 90 over. Corn barges are 42 over. The five-year average is 62 over. So meal, as I said earlier, is at record lows. So the market's telling me that we're overpriced, not too cheap. We're overpriced. For the cash. Now, there's another measure that I look at. That's the option volatility. And the corn option volatility in the March traded all the way down to 15% before it expired. The July and the D's are trading at 18 and 20% volatility. Those are really relatively low. I mean, we blow up this summer. You can see those jump to 35% really fast. Wheat volatility is already firmed up a little bit. It's gone from 19 to 20 to 24, 25. Bean volatility is running 18 to 19%. There's no sign in these markets that the funds are worried or the big traders are worried about the markets getting away from them, because they're not doing anything in options except selling them. Every time you get the options to move a little bit to the top side there, you sell them. So that's what I see going on. As far as trade, you know, Todd, we're selling a lot more than I thought we would sell going into the fall harvest. Our corn sales are, 400 or 500 million bushels ahead of a year ago?
On exports, we're at 69%.
Yeah, but we, if you go look at your sales, your corn sales today are 1,580,000 compared to 954 last year. So you're 600 bigger than you were a year ago. USDA's estimates are only, 300 more than a year ago? So they've got a lot of adjustments to come in their export numbers in corn, and they're doing the same thing with beans here. Our bean sales, they've adjusted them up two or three times. The ethanol grind, we're in the month of November. It's the last month that you can get all the data together and look at it. We exported almost 10% of our ethanol production. We didn't start making ethanol plants to export ethanol. It was to be self-sufficient and protect us against the nefarious action by the Middle East. So there's some things going on here that says the world trade is a lot bigger than what I thought it was going to be. And I don't know how it all works out. Brazil's got a $10 a ton cheaper freight rate to China than the U.S. does. When the Brazilian beans come available, the U.S. beans are just going to fall off the tabletop. The problem is we got 4 or 5 million tons of beans sold to China that we still got to ship, and Brazil's got a 5 million ton lineup. So the bean imports by China for February and March and April look to me like they're going to be 1.5 to 2 million tons a month bigger than they were last year. Just the trade's active. It's more active than I would have given it credit for.
Joe Vaklevic, I want you to think about one more item. We know that China has been wanting to move their corn stocks out. We don't know what condition they're really in. How active have they been since last fall? And what does this mean once they've completed that process? So maybe Dan, you can give me some history too here. In the United States, we got rid of our supplies in the 1980s. And now we've got China getting rid of their supplies here in the 2010s. What does that mean to the marketplace, do you think?
Well, for the moment, the only real impact it has had has been on the DDGs, I think. I think that they want to get rid of U.S. DDG imports, and that's exactly what they did. So I don't know. I mean, China's kind of a black hole of information. We don't necessarily believe everything we hear out of there. The quality of the crop that's in storage or in on hand there has come into question on a number of occasions. So it's really hard to believe the world stocks numbers. Is China going to import corn from the U.S. or anything like that? No, they've got way too much. You've got to hope that it gets to that point at some place. I've heard a lot of things regarding technology and that they're going to start to get into the maybe 20th century, at least in regard to production and start being able to ramp things up there. But I don't know, Todd. I don't see anything on the China corn story that's going to affect us here over the next 6 to 12 months, and that's really what I'm worried about.
Before the Chinese went off on their Lunar New Year, there was some press releases out of their newspapers that said they'd reduced their corn stocks last year by 50 million tons. So if you believe that, they went from 250 to 200. They did it by increasing domestic usage. They did it by reducing imports. They did it by, increasing ethanol use, a lot of things. But in the statement that they released, supposedly the Chinese government's going to start releasing S&Ds here in February or March monthly.
Those will be interesting to watch.
That'd be fake news.
It's always, fake news, yeah. I love it. That's always been a state secret, so I'm surprised you're going to let the secrets out.
Yeah, so what I'm trying to get at, I suppose, as I've asked all these globalization, because we have some things to discuss, but as I asked kind of these globalization questions, is the idea of what happened in the United States in the 1980s, in the 70s and the 80s. So you had the Soviets come in and need to import grain in order to feed their people. In the 80s, we got rid of our stocks. We went mostly to just-in-time. The Chinese began to come up in the 90s. They made a decision to get rid of their soybean stocks at that point, and that caused them to need to import eventually from the United States, I believe. They're also at this point saying, hey, we need more soybeans, and they are pushing their farmers to plant more bean acres and fewer corn acres, which happened last year, should happen again this year, and they're dumping their corn stocks. So the question, I guess, is given all of that, when will China decide that they need to import corn?
Do you remember how we got rid of our corn stocks in the 80s?
I don't. I was too young. I think Dan wasn't. I.
If you want to not plant 35% of his corn acres.
Oh, yeah. No, that was 1980. That was the whole farm set aside program. That was 1980. Was that 81 or 83? It was 83
program.
And we also had a drought that year. The crop that we did plant wasn't very good.
Mother Nature had her say in that, too. So that's what China's doing. They're going to cut their corn acres, and then Mother Nature steps in and reduces her crops. Hello.
I think a big thing that we forget in all of this is that the world is starting to feed their people better and has been. And as they feed their people better and more meat, they need more corn, they need more meal, they need more of everything. And as a result of that, look where the export markets are today worldwide compared to 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And I think that's going to continue as the world feeds their people better. We're going to need more soybeans. We're going to need more meal. We're going to need more corn to feed the world better. And we're going to participate in that here in the U.S.
Well, if you look at the history that you kind of went through, Todd, I mean, basically the 70s period of high prices, for the most part, increased lands that crops were grown around the world. I mean, that's when South America really began to take off as far as developing countries to plant more soybeans and more soybeans, more soybeans. So those high prices in the 70s basically resulted in depressed prices in the 80s, but we had, back then we had farm programs. So we had set-asides and pick programs and market clearing levels and all this rigmarole to try to get rid of our inventory because export demand kind of dwindled on us. And then, of course, we had the 8-8 drought. And then basically the period of the 90s were pretty stable. There really wasn't a lot of volatility during the 80s or the 90s. And then now the double O's basically repeated, I think, what we saw in the 70s. So the high prices that we had here during the double O's and the early 10s here is has increased world production more. So I think we're probably more in a period of time where we're going to have, while we need to produce more food to maybe to eliminate hunger, but I still think we're probably in a period that we're going to have large surplus of inventories. And the only way out of that will be have to be weather issues. Last year, U.S. kind of got lucky with weather problems in South America. Whether or not we have weather problems here in the States this year, I don't know. But if we don't have weather problems, any major weather problems around the world, we could be looking at some lofty inventory levels, not only here in the United States, but around the world. And I think the only thing that will keep U.S. competitive will be a weak dollar.
So there were a couple of things that I was thinking about in that process. So the Brazilians came online over the last 15 years. And they really ramped up their soybean production in the last 15 years. And I was thinking, what I was thinking about with the Chinese was if they're able to unload most of their corn supply, which takes some time, and we have a big corn supply as well, and we get into that point where the globe seems to be fairly comfortable with the idea that there are enough growing regions. There's a North America growing region, a South America growing region. China's got a fairly vast growing region for both corn and soybeans. It stretches from one end of that country to the other. Their corn acreage is large. They produce, what, about 65% of the amount of corn that we do now, I think. I can't remember what that number is, but it's more than 50%. But that we're in just in time and we can source from all around the planet, that we're just in the midst of a fairly large restructuring. And like my background thought on this is that the farmer in the United States is seeing with the soybeans that he's not the major player when you've got Brazil and South America and Argentina both. So that's, they're just in a different, they're in a different place now. With soybeans, certainly, not with corn, and that the supplies are coming across the planet. And I wanted to come back to you, Roy, on this one just a little bit, because you mentioned the barge rates. And is it that the price needs to be cheaper, or is it simply that they can manage to get supplies from other places and they don't have to have nearly the premium on the barge rate.
Well, I think that freight's become such a huge part of our trade. 2 years ago, you took BN rail freight during the winter to $6,000 a car. This year, we didn't get above $3,500, but we had a period of time over the last 2 weeks where you could not get corn out of the Midwest to California or the PNW. We had, it's easy to put a vessel on demurrage, but it's very difficult to tell a chicken you don't have anything to feed them, or a dairy cow, or a beef cow. So we had some people really sweeping bin bottoms last week, and we got as tight as I can ever remember before. Last time we did this was about 12 years ago. So I think that the cost and the instant gratification of having rail available every day to you has become an important deal. I said that Brazil has a $10 a ton freight advantage to China over the U.S. Gulf. That's because they're shipping 70,000 ton vessels. The improvement in the infrastructure in Brazil has been huge over the last 3 years. And I saw an article, today's Thursday, I guess it was Monday, that China was going to be dropping backhoes and caterpillars into Brazil out of the air in the next 2 months. They've agreed to help rebuild the infrastructure in Brazil and get them to where they're really capable of exporting. And the high prices we've had over the last 2 or 3 years has taught them how to double crop beans in Mato Grosso and Paraná. And so I think that the U.S. share of the world trade will continue to go down. It's already down hard, but it will continue to shrink, I think, as the world production gets better.
Joe, are we learning anything today? I know I asked a lot of questions I'm just thinking about this much more broadly this time around, mostly because I'm interested in it. You have any thoughts?
Well, sure. I mean, the exports this year, if you want to get into stuff that's really going to affect the market here short term, exports have been phenomenal, and we need them to be phenomenal. We don't need a 2.5 billion corn carryout. We don't need a 500 million bean carryout. We've got to knock those numbers down and give ourselves some leverage for some kind of rally should a weather event or something along those lines occur. So, yeah, we've got to hope that that continues to be the case. I do have the worry in the back of my head that we're going to start to see cancellations of beans or corn or anything like that along those lines, as we sometimes do in February or March. So near term, that would be kind of my concern here. I like to go back to weather a little bit just because we really haven't had a real weather market here in quite a while, and I think the people kind of forget what that's like. One of the things I've been talking about in some of the meetings we've been doing here recently, you know, weather markets or weather rallies or weather scares, they're generally some of the best marketing opportunities that the farmer gets. And I think that a lot of people forgot that after 2012. People think that every weather scare, every little rift in the weather pattern needs to result in a 2012 market, and it just doesn't. You know, before that, I think a lot of people knew that a weather scare was a good time to sell, and the last 2 years tell me that attitude has changed. We've got to get back to that attitude.
Final thoughts from each of you, if you've got them still. I think, Pete, I'll start with you, Mr. Manhart.
Well, we've got huge carryouts, but I think the exports are so good that we're going to eat into those very well. And as the weather problem we were talking about, a little bit of that this summer could make things boom. Be ready to protect the bottom side or sell cash.
Dan Zwicker?
Cyclically, I guess my expectations of this year's pattern would be late winter, early spring price strength, followed by declines into the middle part of the growing season. And then we may come back for a fall rally. The other thing is, I think we're headed toward a period of much wider basis levels than what anybody would really like to talk about as we go down the road. So as farmers look at these insurance averages, they may not have the protection that they think they do, because I think basis levels are going to get much sloppier as we go down the road.
Roy Huckabee.
If there's a rally in the next 4 or 5 months, it comes on the back of wheat. Wheat market's trying to make a good trade. Wheat's a people food. I suppose you could plug soybean oil into that. And you've mentioned the El Nino period, which could affect Asian palm oil production, Indonesia and Malaysia. If the markets go down, it's going to be led by beans and meal. The trade just has a really bad feel to me. And I don't think the question is whether you go to 950. I think the question is when you go to 950. And some of the guys would tell you go to 850. I'm not, I don't want to be that bearish, but I think you could go to 950.
And Joe Vaklevic.
For the farmers and grain marketers out there, have a marketing plan in place in advance of a price advance. You know, if for some miraculous reason the corn market does rally to 450, don't wait around to see what guys like us think about it. Make sure that you're aggressive and fearless when it comes to these sales. That's the only thing that's worked the last 3 years. So don't ask questions if the market does give you a gift this year.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can listen to the whole of our program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks to our panelists this week, including Pete Manhart from Bates Commodities, Joe Vaklevic of Standard Grain, and Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting, along with our special guest, Roy Huckabee of Lynn and Associates. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.